It's time now for Super Psychologist, Dr. Mara Karpel, and your golden years.
And welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years this evening and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. Central Time, and that's 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on blogtalkradio.com and on drmarakarpel.com. And today is Sunday, June the 25th, and we are back live from Austin, Texas, and Art Mendoza of Accomplice Entertainment and producer of this program is with us to make the show run. And we have another great program in store for you. In a few minutes, we'll be joined on the phone from New York by Dr. Larry T. Force, gerontologist, professor of psychology at Mount St. Mary College, and director of the Center on Aging and Policy. And Dr. Force is going to join us to discuss his new book, The Detoxing of Caregivers, Key Tips for Survival, Strength, and Patience. And later in the program, we'll be joined from right here in Austin, Texas, by Billy Joe Kane to talk about the Radical Empathy Education Foundation, which is currently using virtual reality technology to aid in the prevention of human trafficking. So that will be really interesting. And then later in the program, Dr. Kathleen Ann Hudson, founder of the Texas Heritage Music Foundation, will be joining us from California to tell us what's new in the Texas music scene. And during the program, I will be talking about Medicaid, and I'll try to shed some light on how the proposed changes in Medicaid will affect the elderly, among others. So a word about how words matter. And if this is the first time that you're tuning in, I'm a licensed psychologist from New York City practicing here in Austin, Texas, and in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. And I work with adults of all ages and have a specialty of working with seniors and with caregivers, and for the past few years have been evaluating veterans for PTSD. And part of the time, my office is in the wonderful Veterans Resource Center, Heroes Night Out, which is located in Cedar Park, Texas. And for information about this really great resource for veterans and for veterans' families, you can check out their website, heroesnightout.org. Want to contact me? Do you have a question or something that you think I should know about? Send me an email to Dr. Mara, that's D-R-M-A-R-A, at drmarakarpel.com, D-R-M-A-R-A-K-A-R-P-E-L.com, or go through my website or give me a call. It's 512-626-6973. This evening's program is produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Spike Productions, and sponsored by Dr. Ronald DeVere, neurologist, memory specialist, and author of the book, Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask. To make an appointment with Dr. DeVere at his memory clinic in Lakeway, Texas, or to purchase a copy of his book, you can call him at 512-261-7909, or you can send him an email to rdevere, that's R-D-E-V-E-R-E, at austin.rr.com, and his book is also available on Amazon. And this program is also sponsored by StoryHouse. StoryHouse gathers your stories and turns them into multimedia collections that can be shared now and for generations to come. Have StoryHouse over to conduct a private interview in your home or invite them to your next big event or family reunion. StoryHouse, where your memories live. Find out more at yourstoryhouse.com or call 512-296-8752. All right, this evening's show, we will have time to take your questions. So if you have any questions or comments for me or for my guests, please feel free to give a call. The toll-free number is 855 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or you can email or tweet your questions to me, and I will read them on the air to my guests. And my email address is drmara, that's D-R-M-A-R-A, at drmaracarpel.com, drmaracarpel.com. And my Twitter address is M-A-R-A-E-K. You can also hear this evening's program again by going to my website, drmaracarpel.com. And the link to the podcast, along with any website links that my guests talk about during this evening's program, will be posted later tonight or early tomorrow morning. And you can also hear the podcast as soon as 5 minutes after the show ends by going directly to Blog Talk Radio, that's blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. And for information about previous programs, to listen to previous programs, to read my blogs in Huffington Post and Thrive Global, and watch our YouTube videos, you can find it all. You can also find out about my upcoming book going to my website, drmaracarpel.com. And you can also listen to all the previous programs by going to blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. And to stay on top of everything that's happening in real time, like my Facebook page. It's Dr. Mara Carpel, Your Golden Years. And we post everything there as it happens. So that is really the great central place to find everything. And again, that's Dr. Mara Carpel, Your Golden Years. There's no "and" in that title. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. Stick around, and after the break, gerontologist Dr. Larry T. Forth joins us to talk about the detoxing of caregivers. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Super psychologist Dr. Mara Carpel. We'll be back after words from our sponsors.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmaracarpel.com.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpel and Your Golden Years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmaracarpel.com. And now joining us on the phone from New York, Dr. Larry T. Forth, gerontologist, professor of psychology at Mount St. Mary College, and director of the Center on Aging and Policy. And Dr. Forth is here to talk about his book, The Survival, Strength, and Patience. Welcome, Larry. Are you there?
I am, Mara. Thank you so much for hosting this tonight and asking me to join you.
Yes, and thank you for joining us. I read through your book. I received it this week in the mail, and I thought it was very timely. I think this is a really, really important topic. And you know, as you mentioned in the book, so many people are caregivers these days. So I'm glad that you're here to talk about it. And maybe you can, before we start talking about the book, maybe you can give our listeners a little bit of information about your background.
Okay. I've been in the field for 35, 40 years. I started as a director of a medical adult daycare program back in 79. This is when these things were just starting to form across the nation, and I ran the medical adult daycare program at Burke, rehabilitation in White Plains. And then from there, I moved over to the public sector as a psychologist, but because of my background with aging and Alzheimer's disease, I worked with institutionalized individuals who were older. And I did that, as I tell my students, a professional in this field is someone who is writing, who is practicing, and who is teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was practicing, in the public sector, I was teaching as an adjunct at a neighboring college. And I did that for a number of years, probably 11, 12 years. Then I continued to work for the state, and my job as a psychologist in the state then over time morphed into being a director for a large state institution of education and training. And then I was asked if I'd be willing to continue on with the work of a colleague of mine who was retiring in the Center on Aging. So I did that for a large state institution. And then from there, obtained a full-time tenure-track teaching position, always with, you know, as I tell my students, look, if you go to a therapist and you ask the therapist, what's your area of specialty? And if the therapist says, oh, I handle everything, my recommendation is run. Because you can't handle everything. I mean, you have areas of specialization. So
mm-hmm.
my areas of specialization is adult development. It's not, it's not adolescents, it's not children. And
mm-hmm.
even my courses reflect that. You know, my courses are in psychology of aging, psychology of death and dying, aging in society. So I do a lot in the area of adult development. So that's really a little bit of my background.
Uh-huh.
As you and I talked off air earlier this week, you know, not only am I involved in the club, but I'm involved in the club. I mean, the book is really constructed both from, you know, perspective of heart and brain. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have a knowledge base about caregiving, but the reality is that I also have a experience. My mother was 97 years old and had Alzheimer's disease. And
mm-hmm.
we were in the arena for years, you know, for absolute years, you know, 17, 18 years.
Right.
So one night we were supposed to go to Florida for a respite. And it turned out that the reason we didn't go is because of the fact that my father-in-law was sick. And there I am in upstate New York at a Starbucks when I really should have been at JFK.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we didn't go is because of the, the situation with my father-in-law. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking that, you know, there's a lot to learn from cross disciplines, cross systems. And one of the things to learn is that, you know, I looked at the addiction arena. The addiction arena does, you know, a whole focus on rehabilitation, you know, crisis intervention, rehabilitation, detox, rehab, and then, does, you know, community follow-up and fellowship and support groups. And I was thinking, you know, that type of framework should really be available for caregivers as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's when I came up with the term, the detoxing of caregivers. Because if you've been in it, you know
mm-hmm.
what it's like. I mean, this is not for the faint
yes.
of heart. And
yes.
typically what happens is that the person that gets the least amount of attention from the person that's providing the care is the actual caregiver themselves. Because they're,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're in the loop, they're being present. Day becomes night, night becomes day. Isolation occurs because of the fact that, you know, they're dealing with all of the needs of the individual.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how really the detoxing of caregivers, and that's a little bit of my background, and that's how the detoxing of caregivers came to be.
Right, right. And I know that in the book you talk both about your personal story and also some of the research about caregivers. And
look,
and so,
right, I mean, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, you know, aging in America is really women caring for women, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the reality is
mm-hmm.
that women outlive men. You know, the majority of I was at a conference giving a presentation the other day, and I said it there, and I've said it in other arenas, You know, the majority of women in the United States will live in widowhood for about 6 years. 2 years is really based upon the fact that they live longer than men, and 4 years is based upon the fact that they marry older men. And as I tell my students, if you don't want to do the widowhood route, next time the paper boy shows up, marry him. You know, marry young. Because the reality is that this should not be a surprise. I mean, the only surprise should be, I think, developmentally, as far as developmental milestones now, is the only surprise should be is if you're not called for the role of caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is with people living longer, you know, it's almost a given. And as you and I talked previously, I love the European term. They don't talk about the role of caregiver. They talk about the individual being a carer. And that's really what it is. It's caring. It's carer. It's, you know, in the United States, unfortunately, you know, aging is like a process of liquidation. It's a liquidation of finances, of voice. And just because you do have a particular diagnosis doesn't mean you don't have – it's not – you know, there's also the care receiver too. I mean, the fact is we cannot lose sight of the impact that caring has on the care receiver as well, you know, the individual that's receiving it. But my focus for this particular book was on the isolation of the caregiver, you know, and how important it is that they stop – take an inventory, you know, daily, hourly, whatever it is. But they can't get swept away by the role and responsibility and lose themselves in the process. Because at that point, they're not of any value to anybody.
So in your research, have you found, I thought I remembered reading this, that the statistics that caregivers often die before the person that they're caring for.
I mean, there is some evidence that caregivers, you know, succumb to illness and death more readily than even the individual with the disorder, with the diagnosed disorder. Because it is so overwhelmingly stressful. And the other thing is that it takes many different forms. You know, I mean, there are individuals where the person that receives the care is, you know, living with them. You know, there's you know, in my particular case, my mother lived independently until she was 92. And, you know, then we started to notice that there were some concerns, and she wanted to live independently, so we surrounded her with home health care aides and family. And then one day she fell. And I had taken a sabbatical to write a project on Alzheimer's, and I'll never forget where I was. I was sitting on my front porch. My brother called and said, "Hey, listen, I just received notice that the police were at mom's. She fell into the shower." So thinking, and I lived at that point 60 miles away. So I'm thinking on the way down, oh boy, I just hope she didn't break her hip. Well, she didn't break her hip, thank God. But unfortunately, she broke her neck. Then that cascaded into so many other things. Eventually, we had to do surgery. Then she went through rehabilitation. And then, you know, look, my brother and I are caring people. Our spouses and our kids are very supportive. But the reality is that we're two males. And we're going to do a lot of things for my mother, but we're not bathing her. I mean, the reality is that there's certain things as son caregivers that are off limits versus, you know, maybe daughter caregivers. You know, as far as the sensitivity from both the caregiver and the care receiver.
Right.
And she did not want to, we asked her, "Do you want to come and live with us? Do you want my brother?" No, she, you know, she didn't want to be a burden, you know. But I remember and we had talked about the nursing home because we're both familiar with it, but I remember making arrangements, okay, if she was going to go there. And the first night coming back, oh my God, driving that 60 miles back home, it was such a sad night. And I came back the next day because she was still in rehab. So a lot of her voice wasn't really involved in the decision-making because she had been, you know, quasi-coma, medicated, coming out of, you know, anesthesia with heavy surgery at 90-some years old, 92.
Right.
And I came back the next day, you know, see how things were going. And she said to me, you know a lot of people around here, don't you? And I said, yeah, I do, because I had completed a lot of training in that nursing home. And
uh-huh.
she said, so you put me here to die. And mm. I would rather have taken, you know, a hit from somebody 6'10".
Mm-hmm.
And going back the second night, you know, the long ride, the quiet ride. But
mm-hmm.
when I came back on that second day, I was prepared for her, because she said, same thing, you know a lot of people around here. I said, I do. And she said, so you put me here to die. And I said, no, Mom, we put you here so you could live.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, you knew that you couldn't live independently. We asked if you wanted to come, you know, live with us. You didn't want to do that. We didn't put you here to die. And then
mm-hmm.
what I witnessed is what I had read about and studied about. But there's a rebound effect. Typically, the worst time for the individual that's going into a nursing home is either being on the waiting list or first entering. But
uh-huh.
give it some time. 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, and you start to see a rebounding effect where they become familiar with their surroundings. And she
right.
was there for 4 years and ended up, you know, dying there. And prior to her death, I mean, she was a rock star. She loved it there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the socialization, you know, the engagement, and the place was just absolutely unbelievable. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I chose that place, because as you and I have talked about, there are a lot of places out there you get in and you're just like, what am I doing here? Get me out of here.
Right, right.
But this was a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was reading the book, it kind of hit me how ironic it was that your mother and my father both passed away in the same nursing home.
I know. Is that unbelievable? I mean, and you and I met through, you know, a social media connection, and you were, you know, hundreds of miles away from each other. And
yes.
We both had that experience, that shared experience.
Yes. Yes.
So
very
the one
strange.
Thing that I can tell you, though, and in the book I talk about this, is that there are different styles of caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
I had a stretch where I was doing a lot of consulting in an assisted living home. And, you know, you walk into a room, and the one thing you know about assisted living homes and nursing homes is the thing that you find the most of are pictures. But they're not pictures
mm-hmm.
of the present. They're pictures of the past. The person doesn't have a picture of themselves sitting in a wheelchair with arthritis. They have a picture of themselves surrounded with their kids, husband, wives, you know, grandkids.
Right.
So I was in. I was providing services to this one floor, and there was this one room that had two females in it. And the one female had a lot of pictures on her dresser, and she had grandchildren in and out. It was always like, you know, visiting. The other woman didn't have anybody.
Hmm.
So I asked the staff, what's going on here? Well, her daughter doesn't come to visit her. So I said, you know, I'm thinking, well, where does the daughter live? Like Colorado? Brett? No, the daughter lives 6 miles away.
Hmm.
And she doesn't come to visit her.
Wow.
So being very naive, mm-hmm. I called the daughter, and I asked if we could meet with her. And she came in on a Monday night. I'll never forget this. Met with her at 7 o'clock on a Monday night. And I expressed to her my concerns and the concern of the staff. That, you know, her roommate had all these people in, family support, but your mother didn't have anybody. And, you know, she wasn't going home for holidays and, you know, we understand that you live within, you know, the zip code. And then she told me why she wasn't coming to visit her.
Uh-huh.
And all the things that had happened early on in this woman's life, how she had been abused and tortured by this woman.
Right.
And the reality is that was my naive perspective, that everybody rallies. And not everybody rallies.
Mm-hmm.
And some people
mm-hmm.
rally, some people don't rally for legitimate reasons. And what I realized is that there's different styles of caregiving. And I wrote an article about it, and I called it different styles of adult caregiving, heroes, martyrs, and snakes. And
uh-huh.
the heroes are the ones that just step up, they do it. The martyrs are the ones that they do it, but they let everybody know they're doing it. They do it begrudgingly, provide the caregiving. And the snakes
mm-hmm.
just slither away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized mm-hmm. that there was another group out there that wasn't present, but they weren't snakes. they weren't trying to hide or, you know, shun their responsibility. So I rewrote the article and called it Heroes, Martyrs, Snakes, and the Devastated. There are some people that just cannot be present at that stage of life because it's too devastating for them to witness the demise of their person.
Right.
So absence doesn't always mean that somebody's, you know, moved out of state and living their retirement while you're, you know, bathing mom.
Mm-hmm.
Absence at times can be somebody local, and it can be because they just can't do it, or in the case of that vignette that I gave you about the daughter and the assisted living, it's just you know, they're asked to provide care to somebody that they did not have a good relationship with years ago.
And
so
what about,
you know,
people
so I guess, you know, the takeaway for that is if you've seen one caregiver, you've seen one caregiver.
Exactly. And what about those people who have moved out of state and it's not possible for them to move back, you know, because they have created a life?
You know, I think the one thing that, you know, as I tell my students, look, in today's world, there's two things you have to bring into a family's life. You have to bring your heart and you have to bring a sense of technology. If you can only bring one, then you bring your heart. But with the use of technology and the, you know, web-based platforms and the video conferencing and all of the other things, there are multiple ways now to stay in touch, even though you may not be in the same room.
Right, right.
You know, to stay connected.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I know for my mom, for example, she's in an assisted living back in New York, and speak on the phone every day. And I have a brother who is nearby, and he's much more involved, and he's her power of attorney, is much more involved in the financial issues, and also when emergencies come up, and he visits her, and, you know, he does, and as you said, the male kind of caregiving. But if she, you know, when she has problems, emotional, you know, she's feeling down, a lot of times she'll call me. And, you know, and I make calls to the staff and deal with issues long distance and fly in to see her as much as I can. So, yeah, there are many different ways of caregiving.
See, in that scenario that you just provided, you're not absent. You're present.
No.
Okay?
Right.
And between your brother and you, you've developed, you know, somewhat of a, even like my own brother and I, you know, each of us have, everybody brings a skill set to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So because I had worked in institutional settings and I had seen behavior that was maladaptive or aberrant or whatever, I wasn't as taken or startled by some of the behavior that I saw on the dementia units.
Right.
My brother, not being in the arena, was like wide-eyed. I mean, he was just like, oh, my God. I mean, and you were talking about, we were talking about technology. I stumbled across something, which I highly promote now. You know, my mother would ask me, I have two adult children, you know, in their 30s. The boys married yet? You know, no, Mom, they're not. Are the boys married yet? No, Mom, they're not. Are the boys married yet? And then we would play this, you know, it was like, you know, going back this volley back and forth with the same questions.
Uh-huh.
And one day I'm sitting there with my iPad and I'm talking with her, and I have a lot, I have thousands of photos that I take and over the course of years, and they're downloaded on my iPad. And I had a picture, I was just looking at it, and she said, what's that? And I said, oh, these are pictures. This is a, you know, an iPad. And this is, and all of a sudden what blossomed was a conversation that was so here and now because of the fact that she was looking at pictures of the past. So anytime I would go down to see her, I would have my iPad with me. It wasn't a teaching lesson. It wasn't a lecture. But the fact it was a way of doing, you know, somewhat of a redirection from these questions that were being asked and answered and asked and answered. And all of a sudden we could have a conversation about, no, remember this, look at that, remember this.
Right.
You know, I think,
right.
I think, you know, that's, you know, sometimes you just stumble across mm-hmm. things and all of a sudden you hold on to them. I mean, the one thing that, you know, I would hope that people would walk away from in reading the book is that I practice an orientation called dimensional solution-based treatment. And what
mm-hmm.
that is,
and what
is
that?
It's based upon a theory of dimensionality. And really what it is look, you look around, whether it be work or family or friends, you know, some people just know how to age with ease. And other people, everything is chaotic. We have a dear friend that since her 30s, her house has been chaotic, her car has been chaotic, her desk has been chaotic. Everything is chaos. And for other people, they can just handle these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking one night, and, you know, why is it that way? Why is it that some people can handle things with such ease and some people have such difficulty and morph into chaos? And then I realized it was these dimensions. Like all the psychological theories to date had been developmental. You started prenatal, you work your way up, you know, through the different developmental stages. But the psychological theories had taken a look at the landscape, the horizontal perspective of development. You know, your mother moves in, your mother moves out. You have a child, that's more of a fluid dimension. You have a child
mm-hmm.
with special needs, that's more of a fixed dimension. That you know, you know that you're going to be in that, you know, role for a lifetime.
Right.
So this dimensional solution-based treatment places an emphasis on three things. One is, you know, the talking support, the cognitive stuff, you know, the relaxation. But the other two things, like even in my private practice, I will only see people now if they're involved in some type of exercise program. I don't care if it's
mm-hmm.
a formal gym or they have a golden retriever or they have a bicycle, but something
mm-hmm.
they're doing every day for exercise. And they're also working with a nutritionist
uh-huh.
because of the fact that you have people come in, they're
mm-hmm.
stressed out, they're depressed. And then you ask them about their diet, and you find out they're drinking 6 Cokes and 14 bags of potato
mm-hmm.
chips a day they're eating. And then you want to
right.
know why they feel bad. You know, I am not against medication, you know, but that's not that's not a recommendation for my first response. I'll refer somebody to a psychiatrist if they really want to go. But I ask them, as they're going, stop at the gym. Go get a massage. Go
mm-hmm.
do something. Integrate into your life something that, you know, is referred to as this holistic triage. It's the cognitive,
uh-huh.
you know, because, you know, in our field, the paradigm has always been this biopsychosocial paradigm. You know, my recommendation is we replace that with cognitive energy movement paradigm. The talking therapy, the talking support, extremely important. The support groups,
mm-hmm.
extremely important. But the movement, you have to move. You have to move.
Yes.
You have to. And then the energy, you know, the energy really comes from nutrition. I'm not telling you that you
mm-hmm.
have to, you know, eat or drink, you know, 14, you know, vitamin packs a day. But you really have to pay attention because this is a long-term marathon. This is not a sprint. You know, when you think
mm-hmm.
about caregiving, it's not 6 weeks. You know, when I first started having this conversation with you tonight, and I look back over my own landscape, it was 17 years. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like it's like a little, you know, oh, we're just going to devote, you know, a month to this.
Right, right. That's a good point. And I think that approach that you're taking is good for everyone, whether they're a caregiver or not. But it sounds like, especially if you're a caregiver.
If you're dealing with, you know, some type of stressful situation,
mm-hmm.
whether it be caregiving or not, or you know, you're the blues and, you know, the mood swings and stuff like that, I have to tell you that I really think that this approach that emphasizes, not, you know, oh, by the way, could you, but that places emphasis on the three-prong approach of
mm-hmm.
cognition, movement, and energy is really the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I tell my clients, look, the best therapist you could ever have is one you forget. And
uh-huh.
the reason is because you're coming in for the therapy is artificial. That's not your real life. You want to go back to the natural supports in your life. And that
mm-hmm.
might be, in some cases, a gym or a yoga. I'd rather have a client call me and tell me, you know what, I forgot that I was supposed to come see you tonight because I'm engaged in this, that, or that. That's That's success. That means that things are going well.
Right, right. Well, you know, I think we're on the same page about that, because that's pretty much what this show is about, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, dealing with it from all of those angles is really important. And it sounds like, I guess we just have about a minute left. But I just have one question about that. I think there are caregivers who say, well, I don't have time for any of that. How do I squeeze that in when I'm caregiving?
Well, look, as I told you when we talked during the week, I had a friend one time who was so disorganized and so overwhelmed, and she didn't have time for this and time for that. And I said, what about taking a time management course? And her response is, I don't have time to take a time management course. Well, that says it all. I mean, this is not something incidental. You have to integrate with seriousness this type of paradigm into your life that focuses on you being cared for as well. Because if you're not caring for yourself, then the quality of care that you're providing to somebody else suffers, because you're suffering. You know, and I think that the essential person here. Does it sound selfish? It might need to be selfish. You might need to carve out that time if you're the artist to go back to painting, or if you're the gardener to go back to gardening. Okay, you need to do that. Because the other thing that happens is, just based upon the human condition, I mean, I heard one time the last thing you want your therapist to have is a resentment. Well, you know what? The last thing you want your caregiver to have is a resentment.
That's right.
That, that everybody else in the family is engaged in their life and they're doing this, this, and this, and I'm here, playing bingo, or whatever you're doing, or reading a story, or, helping somebody ambulate. I mean, that gets old real fast, and then it becomes a seed of resentment and anger, and there's really no need to do that. I mean, we know, you know this from what you do, and I know this from what I do. The role of caregiving at times, or the responsibility at times, brings some families so close together, and at other times brings some families so far apart. And I think if there's a way that you can understand that, the way that you look at this role or responsibility will be influenced by the way you look at yourself, and the fact is, if you can take better care and loving care of yourself, then you'll be able to provide better care and loving care for the person that you're being present for.
Right. I think that's a really important point. If listeners are interested in reading your book or finding out more about you, how can they do those?
Two ways. The book is available on Amazon. It's The Detoxing of Caregivers, Key Tips for Survival, Strength, and Patience. If you just Google in The Detoxing of Caregivers, it'll come up. My last name is easy. It's Force, F-O-R-C-E. And I also have a website where you'll find the philosophy and orientation that we spoke about here tonight, as well as a link to the book. And that website is drltforce.com. So it's drltforce.com.
Okay, great.
I'm also on LinkedIn, and also have a Twitter account. Any way that that I can be of assistance, please do not hesitate to contact me.
Great. And I will post those links on the web post about this show later tonight.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
So thank you for all the good work,
the
good work that you're doing with this. What a hats off. It's really needed.
Well, thank you. And thanks for coming on the program. Really
well, thank
enjoyed
you for
talking.
Inviting me.
And I'd love to have you back sometime.
Oh, I would love to do that.
All right.
Thank you so much, and best for the rest of the weekend.
All right. You too. You have a good evening.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right. So we're going to take a quick break, and we have lots more to come, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. there are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240. Worried about memory loss? Dr. Ronald DeVere, certified neurologist and director of Alzheimer's disease and memory disorders in Lakeway, has been helping those with dementia and memory loss for over 12 years, specializing in the diagnosis, treatment, and counseling of those with memory loss and dementia. Dr. DeVere also has a book to reduce your worry and fear by knowing the facts. Memory loss, everything you want to know but forget to ask, available now on Amazon.com. Dr. Ronald DeVere, Alzheimer's disease and memory disorders center in Lakeway, and his book, Memory Loss, everything you want to know but forget to ask. For more information or to schedule an appointment, call 512-261-7909.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmaricarpell.com.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpell in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmaricarpell.com. And so before I go on to talk about the topic that I want to discuss, I just want to fill you in on some news. Art has been busy uploading videos to YouTube, so we have several more that have been uploaded. And those videos are the interviews that have been done in our studio here in Austin since the beginning of 2016. So when guests are live here in Austin, very often they meet in the studio, and in addition to being right here on the internet radio, on Blog Talk Radio, we've been videotaping, and they've been uploaded to YouTube. So you can actually watch them, which is kind of, I think that's kind of cool, and we have several. So the way to find them is to go to YouTube and Google, put in a search, for my name, or even easier, go to my website, drmaracarpell.com, drmaracarpell.com, and then click on videos. So every time they're put on YouTube, I've been uploading them to my website. Also, if you're a regular listener here, then you know that I am a regular contributor to Arianna Huffington's new online magazine, Thrive Global, and every month I post the blog. Last month, at the end of the month, I posted a blog about reconnecting with your center when you feel like you've been thrown off balance. And I have another one coming out soon. So keep your eyes open, and you can find all of my blogs on my website by clicking on blogs or publications, the Huffington Post and for Thrive Global. And if you like my Facebook page, you'll know when the next one comes out. And my book is in the next phase. Every time I'm on the air, we're moving along towards getting this book published, and I'm hoping that it'll be published by the fall. And so it's very exciting, and just stay tuned again here or on my Facebook page for more news about the book. And also stay connected, because there's some other news that I will be sharing with you as soon as I am allowed to share it. All right, so now on to the topic. So before I talk about Medicaid, which is, I think, is a really important topic, I just want to mention a couple of things, because I think this kind of dovetails really well with what Dr. Forth was talking about just now about caregiving. And I want to talk about how words matter. And so there was a situation with my own mom where she had told me that a nurse said to her, she's buying a new dresser because the dresser drawers don't open easily, and it makes her more dependent in the assisted living where she lives, having to ask for people to get things from the drawer for her, where she wants to stay as independent as possible. So she's getting a new dresser where she can open the drawers more easily, and she thought that the nurse said to her, I don't know why you're getting a new dresser. How long do you think you have to use it anyway? Well, if she had really said that to her, that would be a very, that's grounds for firing, really. But some people may not understand why. So words like that, when we say things like that, it's so powerful to hear from a medical professional, you know, just in a flippant way. They may not even mean it. You know, well, how long are you going to use it anyway? The message to her was that, well, obviously she thinks I'm going to die soon, which can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I think it's really important. Words make a difference. And it really caused a lot more anxiety in my mom that she thought that that's what she heard. So if those were really the words, that would have been terrible. However, the second part of this, the second lesson I learned is to check out the whole story. And so I did talk to the nurse, and I'm glad that I approached it very calmly and asked her about the conversation. And it turned out that that's not actually what she said. And I know that my mom is a little hard of hearing, and what she said was that that she didn't understand why she was buying a new dresser, because new dressers don't last as long as the older ones that are built more solidly. So I explained to her the reason that she was getting a new dresser, and also asked her to clarify that with my mom and let her know that she never said what my mom thought she said, and that, no, she doesn't think that she's close to dying. So I think those are two lessons. One is words really matter, and the second is to check out the whole story, especially if you're a caregiver, because I needed some detoxing after that. I was very upset and then relieved to find out that that wasn't really what happened and that it was fixable, because we could just have her, you know, talk to my mom and explain to her that that's not how she feels at all. Okay, so that's, I just wanted to mention that. And I think, you know, having worked in nursing homes and assisted living for a long time, I did actually witness things said that were said in a very flippant way, that the staff member had no idea that it really was anything serious, but the words were devastating to the resident or my client, who was on the receiving end of them, and really caused like ongoing devastation just from simple words that just were not thought out. So it's really important to know that words matter. We grow up thinking, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never harm me. But that's not really true. Words do harm. So we need to keep that in mind. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about just briefly is Medicaid. I think that it's a really important, because this is something that's in the forefront right now in the news about the focus on cutting Medicaid or cutting back, limiting it, you know, changing it. And I think it's really important to understand what Medicaid pays for and what is at risk here. Many people have a misconception that Medicaid is a program that only provides care for low-income people. Not that low-income people shouldn't get care, but I think that it's something that everybody needs to realize that Medicaid is something that affects all of us, unless you're super wealthy. So a majority of Medicaid dollars are spent on people who are disabled. So that can happen to anyone, that they become disabled and lose their job and are not able to work. And they go from having a fair amount of money to not having enough money to pay for the medical expenses. And elderly. So, and let me talk a little bit about the elderly part of this, because that, you know, that's a specialty of mine, and I've worked in nursing homes for many, many years, and a majority, I would say 99% of my clients that I saw in the nursing homes were on Medicaid, and they were not low-income people. They were middle-class people who had worked their whole lives, had pensions, had savings, had all kinds of retirement benefits. But the cost of going into a nursing home, and as Dr. Forrest just described, there are situations where the family cannot take care of their loved one at home, that a person actually needs to go into a nursing home. The nursing home is so expensive that will, if that person lived long enough, it will drain their savings and all of their assets within, not a very long period of time. So unless they die quickly. So, for example, when my dad, I mentioned that he was in a nursing home. He wasn't there very long. He only lasted for about 4 months before he passed, but we didn't know that that was going to happen. And when he went into the nursing home, before he was admitted, before they would even allow him to be admitted, my brother, who was the power of attorney, had to begin the paperwork for Medicaid. Even though my dad was not needing Medicaid right away, he was private pay. He had sufficient savings to pay for it for a while and pension, Social Security. However, the administration of the nursing home knows that if you're there for a few years, then all of that's going to be gone. All of those assets will be gone because of the cost of the nursing home, and you will end up on Medicaid. So I did a little research to find out, what is the situation, in other parts of the country. This was in New York, and I found a story about this woman in Virginia where she had plenty of money. She lived in assisted living. Assisted living does not take Medicare or Medicaid, so or insurance, unless you have long-term care insurance, and that really only pays for a portion of it. So a lot of it is private pay. So she lived in assisted living, and assisted living is expensive, and she ran out of money. She could not live alone at home. She needed a lot of, help, and so her only choice was to move into a nursing home where she would have Medicaid covering the expenses. But the way that they are planning, so they're saying that we're not going to cut Medicaid, we're just changing Medicaid, we're just cutting the expansion of Medicaid. But the changes actually affect whether or not you can stay in that nursing home. So right now Medicaid pays for most of the 1.4 million people in nursing homes, like this woman. A majority of the 1.4 million people who currently live in nursing homes in the United States are receiving Medicaid. And the cut to Medicaid, the rollback that is being proposed, will make it harder So the states will have the right to limit how much coverage you get with Medicaid, and it will make it harder for people to qualify as being medically necessary to receive nursing home care. So that because this woman needed extra care, stay at home, she'd been living in assisted living, but she didn't need tubes and all of the medical equipment, she might not qualify for Medicaid with this new Medicaid cut. States might allow nursing homes to require that a person's family pay for a portion of their care. So, in other words, if you're a hardworking person, you're parents have been hardworking all of their lives, and now they are elderly and need care and need to be in a nursing home, you need to start chipping in your money to pay for it. So you might have to sell your house. You might have to give up your vacations and start cutting into your own retirement savings to pay for your parents' nursing home care. And so then the question is, who's going to pay for yours? And what if you don't have children that can do that? What if your children are not able to pay for it? Or what if you don't have children? So that leaves a lot of people without the ability to have the care that they need. And even if Congress does not repeal the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid is going to remain a target of the cut. And this has been the issue that a lot of political, you know, politicians have run on, and cutting Medicaid, and they're going to keep going after Medicaid. But the people who are supporting and cutting Medicaid do not realize that this is going to affect them. It's going to affect their parents. We heard Dr. Forrest talking about caregivers and taking care of your elderly parents. Well, caregiving might involve having to give up all of your own assets to take care of your parents. And 42% of Medicaid spending is used by nursing homes. So Medicaid is a very high proportion of Medicaid is paying for nursing homes, and the population is aging. As Dr. Forrest just talked about, it's not a question of if we're going to become caregivers, it's when. Most of us will become caregivers if we have parents that are living into their golden years. And many of our parents will end up at some point in a nursing home. And again, as I mentioned, the cost of nursing homes are so high, and that's not going to, there's no way really to decrease the cost of nursing homes. There are a lot of, there's a lot that goes into running a nursing home, taking care of elderly people who need a lot of care. They're going to need to be on Medicaid. And so this is something I think that people need to really wake up about. It's not a political issue. It's been made into a political issue by politicians who run for positions, but it's not about politics. This is not about left or right. Most of the people that I saw in the nursing homes, in the places where I saw them, were on the right. Most of the people that I saw held very conservative political positions. And they were Medicaid recipients, and their families could not have paid for them to stay in a nursing home without Medicaid. So this is not left or right. Don't get pulled into the politics of it. This is about taking care of our elders, and this is really important. So I'm going to get off my soapbox, take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Billy Joe Kane to talk about the Radical Empathy Education Foundation. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpell is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpell, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show. Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmaricarpell.com.
And And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And now joining us from right here in Austin, Texas, we have Billy Joe Kane of the Radical Empathy Education Foundation. Good evening, Billy.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
And thank you for coming on the show. I know it was kind of last minute, but I'm really interested in talking about what you're doing.
Cool. Thank you so much for asking me to be here. I'd love to tell you all about what we're doing.
All right. So why don't we just jump right in? What is the Radical Empathy Education Foundation?
That's a great question. We founded as a nonprofit this year, and our mission is to use technology to solve social problems. The first social problem that we're tackling is human trafficking. So what we're doing with technology is we're creating interactive virtual reality worlds that use games to allow people to experience life as someone that is a human trafficking victim. The idea is that virtual reality has been called the ultimate empathy machine because it puts you in a place where you actually experience the world in a completely immersive way, where when you're wearing a headset, as you move your head around and you move your body around, the world that you're perceiving is, to your brain, a very real world. So what we're doing is we're putting users in a place where they will get a chance to experience life as a person that's being trafficked. And what we want to do with that experience is kind of break down the myths that we have in the world today about trafficking victim or trafficked victims. So we can get people, whether they're legislators, families, regular people, police, social workers, to see them as humans and victims and children instead of criminals or prostitutes, for example.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's really interesting. You know, I think I hadn't really thought about that people had that view of victims of human trafficking.
Yeah, human trafficking is a very hidden crime. A lot of us don't either know about it or don't realize just how pervasive it is. So one of the things that we're trying to do is raise public awareness of the issue itself. And to that end, we're building a game right now that we're going to give away for free. And then what we're going to do is we're going to get into building modules that will work for people that are either in the travel industry, hospitality industry, government employees, basically anywhere where somebody has the chance to see somebody for the first time. And what we want them to do is understand what those victims are actually experiencing so they're cautious about approaching them and be able to learn how to report them to the correct authorities so that we don't cause actual harm to those people.
But mm-hmm.
just trying to get people to understand how bad this problem is, it has been, it's very eye-opening to me. I've run into many, many people. We go and we demonstrate our game at a bunch of different conferences and summits and things like that, and I'm constantly amazed by the number of people that aren't even aware that human trafficking or sex trafficking is a, quote, thing. So even where you know, people are living in very nice suburbs and downtown, there are people that are being trafficked, you know, could be even in your own neighborhood by their parents or their family members. It's not just something that happens a bad part of town or a bad part of the earth.
Right. Huh. So in, you know, I guess in what way will this help to stop the human trafficking?
That's a great question. So what we really want to do is we want to create a series of training modules that are essentially distributed to anyone that could be in the hospitality industry, eventually. But what we believe, mm-hmm. where we believe we need to start is we believe we need to start with the people that are the change makers. We need to start with legislators. We need to start with the people that are at the top of large corporations that have huge supply chains. For example, in England, they passed a law in 2015 where what they're trying to do is eliminate all types of trafficking or slavery within people's supply chains. So, for instance, chocolate, for example, is oftentimes the cacao at the very beginning of the process is actually being harvested by slaves.
Wow.
So,
I did not know
Once you start looking into these things, it starts getting it's scary. So these corporations, and I think there's over 10,000 now that they've actually identified as people that need companies that need to be checking for this. They need to be aware that this is happening. And one of the problems that you have in large corporations, I'm sure you can understand, is that their job is to raise value for the shareholders, but it doesn't necessarily come with they didn't grow a heart like immediately. And I apologize for those that are at the top and do have hearts, but you need to change the way that they are thinking about their supply chain. So we're hoping that we can reach them because that will have a ripple effect through their organizations. And the same thing is going to go for any of the legislators here in the United States. For instance, I mean, you're here in Austin, and you know that we have the Texas Bay Capitol just a few miles away from us, no matter where we live in town. We actually passed a law a few years ago saying that we were going to give $10 million to anti-trafficking efforts, but the money was never allocated. So organizations here in Texas have been waiting for that allocation, and I think that if we can make the people that are in the allocation portion of our legal system, if we can get them to understand just how important this is and put them in the shoes of someone that's waiting and begging daily and hourly to get rescued, if you will, I think we can start finding ways to make that money free up. So that's my hope, that we can make a difference at the top and then have that kind of flow down to other people that need to understand what this is. Current anti-trafficking training pretty much consists of a trainer that goes on site and kind of goes through a PowerPoint with people. It's not good enough. With virtual reality technology, we can raise empathy levels, and it also results in added retention of the material. People perform better when they're using game simulations. Stanford University did a study a while back, and what they had done is they had put people inside of a virtual reality simulation that explained to them how much energy and effort is put into generating hot water. And what they did was they were trying to change the way that people felt about resources being used. And so it's so they gave the same exact material was given to people that just had it on paper, and then people experienced it through virtual reality. They went back and measured, I think it was after 6 months, and the people that had learned everything through the paper documentation they had not affected their lives in any significant way. Their water use was still the same as it was before, but the people that had experienced it through virtual reality, 30% of them had actually changed the way that they lived and the way that they thought about using hot water. So we feel like if that can work for hot water, I think we can do that well, if not better, for people that are victims of human trafficking.
Right. Okay. So how do you get this to those legislators to use?
Well, that's going to be one of our challenges. We're currently working unofficially with some high-level government groups with the I don't know how many I can say. So we're working with some high-level government groups. We're also working with some survivors groups as well as some individual survivors, trying to make sure that our material is accurate. I've met with a couple of legislators, and they are willing to give it a try. So I'm hoping that once we get to the next phase of our development, we'll get to the local legislators inside of our headset and see how things go. But I have a lot of interest already from people that are involved with the UK Slavery Act. So we're on path to get there. It's just not going as fast as I want, but we're heading in that direction. So if anybody that's listening that wants to help us get there, we're certainly willing to accept help.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm sure dealing with the bureaucracy is a little bit challenging.
It's challenging. It's scary. It's exhilarating. It's frustrating. But I know that there are good people that are involved in our government. I know there's good people that are involved in corporations. And I know that there are people that want to make things better. We just need to connect with the right.
Yeah,
and
good point.
One other thing I'd like to share is that while, you know, human trafficking is the first thing that's on our list to work on, the using virtual reality and gaming technology to solve social problems is our mission. So human trafficking isn't the only area that we want to be working in. We're certainly capable of doing just about any other social issue that's out there, whether it's, you know, being concerned about coconut oil, palm oil, things like that. Anything that we need to do to make a change to, if we can change people's hearts and minds about social issues when it comes to human trafficking, we can apply that to any other social issue.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. So do you have other ideas about what you're going to do next, or is it one thing at a time?
Yeah, right now it is. It's one thing at a time.
Right.
The trafficking issue, the market, I suppose you would say, for anti-human trafficking training is enormous. The hospitality and travel industries have over 300 million people worldwide that work in them. I'm sure that my numbers aren't even nearly as accurate as they ought to be. So even if we get a small percentage of the people that are, you know, in the right places, we have a lot of work to do.
Right, right. So this is a big project.
Yeah, and it's the one that we're going to start with because we feel like it is the one that requires the most empathy and the most immersion to be able to get somebody to understand it. One anecdote that I'd share with you is that we were at South by Southwest this year, which is where we released our first version of the game, which is actually on Google Cardboard right now. You can find it. I'm sure we'll connect a link somewhere, but it's under the name of the game is Trapped, a VR detective story. And so when we were demoing it at South by Southwest, I had a teacher who had been teaching for 40 plus years. She walked up and she said, sex trafficking, is that something that's kind of new? I just sort of heard about it. And I was like, wow, if we have a teacher that has never been educated about this, who's been around children for over 40 years, we really have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is a problem and a tool that I'm going to be working on for quite some time. But again, as a system, we're certainly able to address any social problem that can be, if you can think of a way to put it inside of a three-dimensional universe, it's something that we can address.
Right. So how can people find out more about the Radical Empathy Education Foundation or even become involved?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. If people are into social media, we use the Twitter handle of Reef Cares, which Reef is short for Radical Empathy Education Foundation. We're on Facebook, and I believe the URL that is facebook.com/reefcares. We also have our own webpage, which is radicalempathyfoundation.org. We didn't want to put education in there. That's too much to type. And at any of those places, you can follow us, and I'm available through any of them. If you connect to them and follow us, you'll find me. And there's a contact form on our main webpage. So if anyone wants to learn more, I can send them anything that they want. We have a version of the game already up on Google Cardboard, or Google Play, if you will. So people can experience the virtual reality world and walk around as a victim in her own home. And I'd love to share everything else about what we're doing. We're taking that experience and expanding to the HTC Vive. It's a much higher resolution, much more in-depth VR system. And I can give demos. I can participate in it. I can give somebody a build of it. So
great.
There you go.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm going to post all of that on my web post, all the links, so people can go right there and get it all later tonight.
Well, thank you so much. I certainly appreciate it.
And thank you so much for what you're doing and for being on the program.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to join up here anytime. We need to fight the power and get out there and make a difference.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. And you have a good evening.
Okay, you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. So now coming on the program, we have Dr. Kathleen Hudson, the founder of the Texas Heritage Music Foundation, to listen on what's happening with Texas music. Welcome, Kathleen.
Hi there. I'm sitting out in sunny San Jose.
Oh, how nice.
California, traveling back from my annual writers' conference in Monterey. And I have lots and lots of things going on. The Music Foundation is celebrating 30 years. I started it in 1987. So we are doing a lot of special projects. We have a first ever songwriters workshop for young people, July the 24th through the 26th at Shriner University in Kerrville. And that is funded by a group of musicians. They played Johnny Nicholas' Big Band Bash up at the Hilltop Cafe out of Fredericksburg. And so for the last couple of years, he's made a donation to the foundation so we could start this songwriter school for young people. And Terry Hendricks and Lloyd Maines will be hosting this year, and they're bringing recording equipment. So we'll be looking at songs, writing songs, and recording some.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah. Part of the new energy for the 30th. My doctor, my PhD, is in rhetoric and composition with a focus on writing and what writers say about writing. So it was just kind of a perfect expansion of what I've been interested in doing. And September is the birthday of Jimmy Rogers, the father of country music. And some of your listeners may know Jimmy from the Grand Ole Opry, or they may know Jimmy from Meridian, Mississippi. But he loved Texas. And he built his dream house in Kerrville, Texas. And he lived there from 1929 to 1931. So when he said, "They put me off in Texas, a state I dearly love, wide open spaces all around me, moon and the stars up above," he loved Texas. So we, for 30 years, we've had a tribute to Jimmy Rogers. I worked with his grandson, the late Jimmy Dale Court. I've worked with many of his family members. And this year, we are actually having a celebration on his birthday, September 8th, in Ingram, which is right outside of Kerrville. And our featured artist is Jimmy Dale Gilmore. And Jimmy Dale Gilmore does Jimmy Rogers as well as anyone. He's pretty fantastic.
Okay.
He's a member of the Flatlanders, too, you know, from West Texas. But that's going on September 8th, and then September 20th at the school, I have an artist from San Antonio, Michael Martin, who does phenomenal interpretations of Bob Dylan. And Bob Dylan loved Jimmy Rogers so much, he put out a tribute album to Jimmy in 1997. And it was the same year I was doing a 100th anniversary party for Jimmy because he was born in 1897. And Bob Dylan put out a tribute album, and he had Willie Nelson, and he had Aaron Neville, and a lot of wonderful performers. So Michael Martin is going to do a tribute to Bob Dylan in Jimmy Rogers' birthday month in Kerrville, Texas.
Okay, so it all ties together.
And so this is what I have looking forward to me for the last projects of my foundation this year. And the other major project is September 29th. We'll have 50 performers on the Shriner University campus, and that is a tribute to all aspects of Texas history and Texas music. And we'll have a short tribute to Jimmy Rogers then, and we'll have an evening concert with Terry Hendrix and Lloyd Maines. And then in October, Max Baca y Los Tex-Maniacs, Grammy Award winners. I think they're out in Santa Fe playing on the square now, but they're from San Antonio, and they'll be playing the Coffee House at the university in October.
Mm-hmm.
So the importance of that for me and my life is that I'm also retiring from the directorship of this foundation I started. I will be, I'm, you know, you can only run a business so long, and 30 years
right.
was a good run. So I will be moving the Coffee House and Texas Heritage Music Day to Shriner, where I teach, and there'll be projects of Shriner. And the board is going to take a couple of other foundation projects and move ahead.
Okay. Okay. So you're going to keep. You're going to stay in. You're going to stay in the mix. You just retired from the foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Retiring
okay,
as
good.
A director.
Okay.
As a
okay. Well, that's
volunteer
good.
Executive director for 30 years.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
I ask a couple of other nonprofit. Foundations and a couple of big organizations, and very few of them have heard of a foundation that ran for 30 years with a volunteer director who started it.
Wow, yeah.
I mean, that's so we're celebrating 30 years and all that's ahead, and of course,
congratulations.
The Texas music scene is alive and well, and new bands are bubbling up and new venues. I think right now the house concert venue is really being a great place
yes.
for artists to get people to listen to them and people to pay money.
Yes, it's really around Austin that's becoming a thing, a big thing.
Yeah, well, it is in Kerrville
mm-hmm.
and it is out
mm-hmm.
in the Hill Country, Wimberley,
mm-hmm.
Bernie. More and more people are starting to invite artists in. And, you know, it's a great model. You all bring money and you bring food to share and you have an intimate evening with the artist that you would never have otherwise.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah.
So that's,
very nice.
That's bubbling. Yeah.
Yeah, we had the house concert with The Brew in March. You know The Brew,
okay.
the salsa band The Brew?
I don't.
Oh, they're the best.
Where
will
you? Where will that be?
No, we had it. We had it in March in
oh,
Austin.
Oh, okay.
In Austin.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll have some more.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm going to come up to Austin Tuesday night. I get
mm-hmm.
back Monday night from California, turn around, and come back to Austin Tuesday night because I've got to be in Dallas at my brother's house Wednesday. So
uh-huh.
Tuesday night at the Mercado, Ernie Jawawa and his guest do a showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And his guest is Ruben V from San Antonio. And I'm currently working on the manuscript of the Tex-Mex Tejano voices in Texas music.
Uh-huh.
I have the interviews. I have the research, but the time to transcribe them and shape it into a manuscript keeps eluding me.
Right.
So I'm gonna go Tuesday night and see if I can get properly inspired. I may run back down to Mexico later in July because I have a very quiet apartment there, and I can just turn on the interviews and transcribe and not have any other distractions.
Great.
So that's what I'm working on.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Very nice. So there's a lot going on, you know.
Yeah.
Texas is full of musicians.
Well, we just keep losing them as well. And right now we're all paying tribute to the phenomenal writer, Margaret Mosier. And she announced that she was putting herself in hospice. And what I think is so beautiful is that she's giving people a chance to say goodbye and to be around her. And I know this afternoon at the Texas Pop Culture Museum in San Antonio, there was a songwriters gathering with Alf DeHaley from Houston and Rex Foster and one other songwriter. And if she can be there, she will be, because that Popular Culture Museum was her baby and her dream.
Mm-hmm.
But Facebook allows us to see what we're all saying to each other about this. And it's really beautiful and sad, but it's beautiful to be part of the process of dying in this way. And, you know, we've had this happen with musicians and Jimmy LaFave.
Yeah.
I saw him at Threadgills, and he had not made a public announcement yet, but he said to me, you know, I really don't have more than 3 months to live. And he made a public announcement, and 3 days before he died, or four, there was that huge tribute at the Paramount, where he came out on stage in a wheelchair at the very end and actually led us all in, you know, Irene Goodnight. So people who fuss about Facebook and social media, one thing I'm seeing is that if you choose to, you can actually be more connected and be part of beautiful things occurring. So, you know.
It's all how you use it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I teach at a university, and definitely ways we communicate, that's part of the conversation with my students, as well as decisions I have to make as I keep, you know, approaching one birthday after another. Let's see, your show, this is the golden years, right?
Yes.
So, many of us in our golden years, I'm approaching a birthday in October, and I thought approaching 70 was kind of dramatic, but this will be approaching 72. And, you know, just keep saddening
up. But you just keep going, and it sounds like you still have lots of energy, so, you know.
Yeah, I'm really excited to refocus on my projects, my creativity, and teaching, and not be involved in actually funding and running a business.
Right. So it'll give you a lot more time.
Glad I did it.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be more space in my head anyway.
Well, Kathleen, it's so good to hear from you. And,
thank you. I love being invited to call in. And the last time when I missed the call, I was at that San Antonio Pop Culture afternoon, and I had it all set up that I would leave there in time to make the call. And I left and got in the car and just spaced everything out and drove home. So I appreciate y'all being patient, because I love sharing what I'm doing. I have a very active website. I have a personal website, KathleenHudson.net, and I have social, you know, media pages.
And where's the best place that people can go to find out what's happening?
Well, there's two places, of course. Facebook page for the Texas Heritage Music Foundation. Not the group, but the page. And then the website, www.texasheritagemusic.org.
Okay.
So both of those will very good places. And then I just led a creativity workshop out here, and I am available to do workshops and give lectures and talk about music and creativity and writing. And all of that information is on my personal website, KathleenHudson.net.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So I will post that again on my web post about this show so people can
can
go click on it and it'll take them right to those places.
That'll be great.
Yeah.
And I hope
see
you at some music in Austin sometime.
Yes, definitely. Let us know when you're coming into town. This time
right now I'm aiming at the Mercado Tuesday night.
Yeah, this time I'll be near South Tiger Island on Tuesday.
Oh,
working down there. I'm working down there this week. But
okay.
But next time.
Okay.
All right.
Let me know. All right, and
I'll let
you know.
Yeah.
Thanks a
exactly.
lot.
Exactly. All right. Have
okay.
a good evening. All right.
You bet. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
All right. So. I'm going to fill you all in before Art cuts us off the air, let you know what's happening in the next couple of weeks. Next Sunday, July 2nd, we'll be taking a break for the July 4th weekend, and we'll be playing an encore presentation. So I hope you all have a wonderful and safe Independence Day. And then the following Sunday, July the 9th, we'll be back with another great program from here in Austin, Texas. And this time we'll be live in the Austin studio with our guest, seniors real estate specialist Heather Kite, to discuss the hot Austin housing market and her specialty of working with families looking to downsize or moving an aging parent to assisted living, helping with retirement moves to the Austin area to be near adult children, and other real estate transactions for the 55-plus demographic. So not just seniors, but 55 plus have pretty unique real estate needs, and she's going to talk about that. And the Austin musical group American Dreamer joins us once again. And Laura Galazunas reports in from the retirement paradise, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. And if you want to hear tonight's program again and read the information from this show, get the link that my guest spoke about, learn about upcoming shows, listen to previous shows, read my blog, watch the videos, all of that, go to my website, drmarakarpel.com, drmarakarpel.com, and also be sure to follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. You can listen to this evening's program in as soon as 5 minutes from now by going directly to Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. This evening's program was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by neurologist and memory specialist Dr. Ronald DeVere, and by Storyhouse. And special thanks to my guests, Dr. Larry T. Force, Billy Joe Kane, and Dr. Kathleen Huston. And of course, thank you to Art. Thank you all for listening. Have a peaceful night and inspiring 2 weeks. And remember, youth has no age. Good night, everyone.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Karpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Karpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.